Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Stuart A. Cuff with Utility Workers Union of America, asking you to tune in every time you can to Bob Carson's Carson's Corner, one of the best pro-labor shows in America. We love it at Utility Workers. We love it across the AFL-CIO, and we're grateful to Bob for coming on and holding up our issues and holding up our principles and values.
I'm Andrew Craig. I'm an investigative reporter and attorney based in Washington, and I'm the author of Presidential Puppetry, Obama, Romney, and Their Masters. And I want to encourage everyone to support, listen to, and talk about the Carson's Corner show in New Jersey, which is a pioneering, courageous, and apt voice for progressives in New Jersey that I first came to know in 2009 when he was the pioneering and virtually unique media outlet willing to take on Chris Christie, dig deep, and look at how he had come to power and how he was misusing it. And 4 years, 5 years later here, that's all come to pass.
Hi, this is David K. Johnston, and you're listening to Carson's Corner with Bob Carson.
Hi, this is Harry Kaysen, member supporter of the Zeitgeist Movement. As Zeitgeist members, we know that it is virtually impossible to find sources in the media that speak truth to power. Well, Carson's Corner does just that, and it is one of those special places where you can find out what is really going on, not just what the bosses want you to know and think. So listen in and hear some truth at Carson's Corner. And oh, by the way, be sure to check out all the Zeitgeist and Zeitgeist-related films you can find on YouTube. We've got a world to save.
This is Les Leopold, the author of How to Make $1 Million an Hour, and I just want to tell you that you'll get a rich and rewarding experience by listening to Carson's Corner.
This is Greg Palast, reporter for BBC Television and Democracy Now, and author of the new book Vulture's Picnic, In Pursuit of Petroleum Pigs, Power Pirates, and High Finance Carnivores, and you're listening to Carson's Corner on 5:30 a.m. Underground Progressive Radio, radio for the 99%. Help us occupy the airwaves and support Carson's Corner and support 5:30 Underground Progressive Radio.
Hey, this is Frank Schaefer, author, writer, New York Times bestseller. But I'm here today because I've got a new book called Why I'm an Atheist Who Believes in God. And I'm also on Carson's Corner because corporate media is so one-dimensional in terms of the kind of things they cover that they couldn't comprehend a discussion that would begin with a statement that implies a huge paradox. But I think there's a lot of thinking people out there who understand that life is paradoxical, and Carson's Corner is one of those places you can discuss it. So thanks for being with us.
Now, welcome live to another edition of Carson's Corner on Monday, August 25th, 2014. My name is Bob Carson. Pleased to be with you here. We are also in conjunction with the CommonsProjectNetwork.com. Make sure to check out the CommonsProjectNetwork.com for great independent media. All right. And I also want to include that this show is not market approved. That's so important. That's a slogan that I came up with a few days ago. Carson's Corner and the election boycott effort, the election boycott campaign, we are not market approved, which is all the more reason for you to listen to the show, because we know that the market is based on waste and inefficiency. Okay? The marketplace is inherently flawed, And as a result of that, what you're going to get in the marketplace is it's as Harry Kaysen says, only what the bosses want you to know. And there's a great deal of truth to that. There really is. It is critical for things to break down. It is critical for things to malfunction in order for us to, just be consumers. Just consume, consume, consume. Our whole system is based on consumption. This is a zeitgeist tenet. But nonetheless, that's why it's all the more reason to listen to Carson's Corners, because we are not a market-approved show. Very, very important stuff there. All right. Continuing to read the book by Paul Street, The 1% versus Democracy. They Rule, The 1% versus Democracy. And I got to tell you, this is a great book. A lot of the points, Paul Street is great when it comes to pointing out the hypocrisy of the Obama administration. And I'm going to discuss some of the financialization of our economy, our finance has taken over factories. This is another point in Paul Street's book, but this is something we've talked about on the show for years now. This is nothing new, but you got some important points laid out here. But before we do that, I wanted to read a statement that I wrote yesterday, and I want to break it down for you. This is a statement that I wrote for the Election Boycott website at electionboycott.weebly.com. It writes, in 2008, I supported President Obama, although I didn't vote and have never voted in an election, under the belief that President Obama was the alternative to the conditions we faced at the time. Shortly after his election, it became apparent that Obama was indeed a more effective evil in advancing the corporate agenda of the ruling class. He famously told Wall Street executives, the very people that melted our economy, I am here to help. A wise man named Jacques Fresco once said, politicians are not elected to change things, they are elected to keep things the same. Keeping things the same entails a furtherance of the corporate state, which makes life in America unbearable for those not in the ruling class. Since it is obvious you cannot work within the system for change, boycotting the elections is the most effective form of dissent. The very definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again. Now, these are very, very important points that I lay out in this statement that really, I think, deserve further scrutiny. In 2008, President Obama ran a remarkable campaign. It truly was a revolutionary campaign in terms of many things. Organizing for America was just a well-oiled machine that knew how to use the Internet to reach the younger voters because, the young vote in America, the 18 to 29-year-old demographic in the 2008 election voted for Obama big time. And, at that time, the conditions that we faced were really unbearable. We had a free fall of the economy. In the last 3 months of the Bush administration, we lost over 1 million jobs. Okay, we lost tens of trillions of dollars in production. Okay, millions of people lost their retirements. I mean, the true human cost associated with the financial meltdown of 2008, there's really no way we can measure it. It's unbelievable. And so, here comes President Obama, a relatively young guy, somebody that was billed as a community organizer, right? Even though we know that before he worked, before he was a community organizer, he actually worked for a CIA-linked company but nonetheless, it was a very, very inspiring story. And President Obama, rhetorically, was absolutely great. He was the right candidate at the right time to make people believe that change was here. We're going to reverse the fundamentals of capitalism. We're going to change things. But then, shortly after his election, it became apparent to me and others, although I supported President Obama until 2010, that President Obama was just another corporate guy. I mean, this is a guy who, right from the beginning, stacked his administration with Wall Street guys, stacked his administration with individuals in the top 1% of income earners in America. And that was a real bad sign. And, you know, one of the things that Paul Street points out in this book, and I think this is so telling, it's remarkable, is that, you know, after the collapse of 2008, you had this tremendous amount of anger that went towards Wall Street, the financial sector. And this anger really culminated, I think, in the Occupy movement. We weren't allowed to have a movement where we could just have an Occupy moment. And, you know, President Obama, like he did during the healthcare debate, met with a whole bunch of financial CEOs, okay? And these are individuals, arguably, that should be put in jail. These are individuals that literally are indifferent to human life. The basis of rationale for every decision they make in their life is the sequence of money, okay? So... You know, there's a tremendous amount of anger at these CEOs, and President Obama meets with them and says, listen, my administration is the only thing between you and pitchforks. I'm here to help. Now, contrast that to what FDR did in the 1930s, where, again, you know, we had the material conditions of capitalism just deteriorating. More so than what we saw in 2008, but nonetheless, I mean, you could compare the two situations. And you know, FDR responded with the New Deal. FDR responded by saying, you know, I welcome their hate. He didn't say that he was there to help the very people that helped to destroy the economy. He didn't say that at all. In fact, he had a more adversarial tone with the donor class, the ruling class. And then he raised taxes dramatically as a punishment to the very wealthy. But this was a measure that was supported by the American people, because the American people understood that in order for us not to go into fascism, the very wealthy are going to have to take a back seat when it comes to the economy. The very wealthy are going to have to pay a high effective tax rate on their income, because that is the morally just thing to do. It makes the most economic sense. And the very wealthy are going to have to take a back seat to unions. The, you know, mobility of workers is important in trying to get the economy going. And so therefore, the very wealthy, you know, he had to wage war essentially against the very wealthy. Now, I don't think he went far enough. In fact, there are those that say that FDR actually saved capitalism, and, you know, to a certain extent that's true, because we could look at after the passage of the Wagner Act, which established unemployment benefits and established Social Security programs that are socialist-like in nature and that benefit everybody and that are beloved by the American people. But then after, systematically, you had, you know, the Taft-Hartley Act, you had the creation of a system of labor control in America. And this resulted in where we're at right now, where all the countervailing institutions have been just decimated. We are moving towards a corporate state. And this is why we cannot continue to support the elections. The corporate state is advancing at a record pace. Ralph Nader talks about corporate statism, how it is the corporate state above all else, the corporations above all else. The corporations want the most feasible control of outcomes using the government and both political parties as tools. And this is what we've seen in America right now. And President Obama has aided and abetted. He believes in corporate statism. There is no question about that. And so you have President Obama that has been the more effective evil in advancing the corporate agenda. Go back to 2011. I mean, you know, you could, of course, go back before that, but go back to 2011 when it was President Obama that proposed long-term cuts to Social Security, Okay, the change CPI, which would have costed seniors 2% of their income based on President Obama's market-based calculations. It was a President Obama that proposed cuts in Medicare, you know, means testing, which would ultimately lead to converting these programs into a block grant. And so this is what the elites want to do in our society. They want to privatize programs like Social Security and programs like Medicare because these programs prove that their ideology that the government can't work, the government can't do anything right, is absolutely incorrect. It's not a question of whether or not the government can and should work. These people believe that the government should work for them, and so therefore the answer is to privatize all of these programs. And, you know, they tried it with Ronald Reagan in 1983, and then or 82, and then Reagan, you know, realized that he, to his credit, made a mistake and then created the Social Security Trust Fund. George W. Bush tried it in 2004, and this is the goal, because there's a tremendous amount of money to be made in privatizing these programs, and it puts the market first above human life. It creates problems, and problems create profits, and the other way around, profits create problems. And so, you know, Social Security, Medicare, socialist-like programs do not entail profit for the elites, and therefore these programs are under attack, and they have been for the last 30-plus years. And this results in the new normal of capitalism, which I talk about extensively on this show. And so, you know, President Obama has been the more effective evil. You know, President Obama, during his deficit commission, one of the recommendations, and Obama took ownership with the deficit commission, okay? He put all these CEOs, people that are hostile to these social programs, on the deficit commission. And one of the recommendations of the deficit commission was to raise their age, the retirement age, to 69. This is another thing that the elites are chomping at the bit at, raising the retirement age, having people work longer and longer and longer, putting a downward pressure on wages. And the average black man in America lives until 69, as of a few years ago. That's the average age of a black person in the United States of America. So we'd have to believe that if President Obama had his way, the average black man would be working until the day he died. And that is just remarkable. But you can go, you know, issue after issue down the line, and you can plainly see that President Obama is the more effective evil. He, you know, rhetorically plays the violin with his left hand and governs with his right hand. I'm probably butchering that, but you get the idea. Okay, there's just no question about it. It is all about the corporate state, advancing the corporate state. And what happens as a result of that is life becomes unbearable for you and I. You know, life is unbearable at this point. The conditions of capitalism have deteriorated to such a point where, you know, I can go over the statistics. It's you know, we're looking like Latin America now. You know, the Latin America nations, you know, in terms of life expectancy, in terms of inequality, in terms of poverty and everything, that's what the United States is becoming at this point. And, you know, we have to sort of, you know, take a step back and say, why are we doing the same thing over and over again? You know, why are we continuing to vote for politicians who are elected to keep things the same, not elected to change things? Why are we continuing to support a system that is, you know, fundamentally opposed to sustainability, fundamentally opposed to efficiency, fundamentally opposed to the interests and needs of the vast majority of Americans, 95% of Americans, 98% of Americans who are working, who are workers, who make their money receiving a paycheck or a salary. Why do we continue to support that system? And that just really begs the question. I mean, that is, you know, even on the election boycott Facebook page now, you've got all these people coming out and arguing and trying to get us to accept the system. You know, Adolf Reed, the socialist and, you know, philosopher and everything, said something to the effect that, you know, we cannot vote our way out of this problem. We cannot continue to vote. Our problems are not going to be solved by electing a politician. And so, you know, that is why I support the boycott election. That is why, you know, I wrote this comment here to be posted on the boycott site, the electionboycott.weebly.com, because, you know, this is where we're at in America right now. It is all about the corporate state. It is all about advancing the corporate state. And in turn, we have, you know, sectors of our economy that are going that are going off the charts. I mean, look at the finance industry. You know, this is one of the things that Paul Street points out in his book, how the financialization of our economy, which, again, it has taken place during both administrations. It's easy to vilify the Republicans and Fox News for being fascists. And I do believe the Republican Party is approaching fascism. I do believe Fox News is a fascist network. There's no question about it in my mind. So they are clearly defined enemies. You know, yeah, it's easy to rail against them. And believe me, I enjoy railing against Fox News. I enjoy railing against the fascist in our society. But if you look at, if you want to take an honest look at deregulation, and you want to take an honest look at how we got to where we got right now with the financialization of our economy, with finance taking over manufacturing plants, you have to look at, you could go back to the Reagan administration in 1983, the deregulation of the SNLs, which culminated in, you know, a massive amount of fraudulent loans taking place. You could also, of course, probably the most deregulation took place under Bill Clinton's watch. So much happened during the Clinton administration. I mean, regulators were bullied. Regulators were told to look at the financial institutions as customers and don't even think about bringing a fraud case against the regulators. And Clinton, you know, reinvented the way government worked. Well, what that entailed was making sure the government worked on behalf of the financial sector and expanding the financial sector. And Clinton, of course, was the head of the New Democrats, and he modeled himself, and Tony Blair modeled himself after Bill Clinton. And you know, he emphasized Wall Street over Main Street. And, you know, it was so much deregulation. In 1999, the repeal of Glass-Steagall, which separated commercial from investment banks. And that led to these financial institutions being allowed to basically hedge their bets with our money. Okay, you know, and the taxpayer basically provided the shield for the financial institutions. You could also go back to the Commodities Futures Modernization Act, I believe it's called, and that banned the regulation of derivatives. And another thing that I found out that, you know, when I was reading this book by Paul Street, was the fact that after the Commodities Futures Modernization Act, I believe, which was slipped into a Clinton omnibus budget. After that, you had a law passed that would mandate that when these financial institutions go bankrupt, their first order of business is to pay off to pay off the investors, to pay off. I wrote it down here, there was a law passed actually that gave seniority to derivatives if a bank went bankrupt. So in other words, you know, if a financial institution, if a bank goes bankrupt, they have to pay the holders of the derivatives as opposed to paying, you know, pensions, anything that's tied into these banks with the securitization chain and everything. And so, you know, right there, you know, bank goes bankrupt, they have to pay, you know, the investment firms, they have to pay the investors as opposed to paying pensions, as opposed to paying workers. We saw this in Detroit too, with the appointment of the financial manager. Again, this is mentioned in Paul Street's book, where the city bondholders are paid first, and the pension holders and the workers and so on and so forth had to take a 50% cut in their pay. It's just remarkable. But this took place under a Democratic president. This took place under Bill Clinton. And so, you know, what do you have here? You know, why continue to support one faction of the business party? Why continue to support the Democrats who have to get elected just like the Republicans and will pony up to the big moneyed interests, the donor class, to get elected? It's really remarkable. And then you have President Obama meeting with 13 different financial CEOs, right, to protect them, saying, I'm here to help. I'm here to help. So this is the mentality that President Obama went into, you know, when he first came into office. I'm here to help. Well, you know what? If that were a true socialist, if that were, you know, someone who looks at the financial sector of our economy as parasitic and creating nothing of value, where, you know, money is pursued simply for the sake of pursuing new money in an arbitrary game that holds no productive value to society. Because remember, these financial firms right now, they're not trying to produce anything. They're not making anything. They're simply moving money around. They're simply moving, you know, contracts around. They're not trying to look for green energy. They're not trying to create, you know, the next life-sustaining product. No, they're just manipulating markets, and that's what they do. And so if this were someone that truly wanted to change the fundamentals of our economy, he would wage war against the financial sector. In fact, you know, when Obama came in during the Dodd-Frank legislation, there were calls there were calls to break up the banks. There were calls to nationalize the banks. Let's make the banks the same old boring financial institutions that they were, you know, prior to Ronald Reagan. You know, green lampshades, lending money to people in the community, having that money paid back, you know, 20, 30 years, you know, therefore, you know, making sure that the lender, the borrower can pay the money back, you know, all of these different things. And let's tax these financial institutions. Another thing that President Obama completely ignored. In fact, President Obama allowed these CEOs to receive bonuses in spite of the fact that they just tanked the economy. I mean, what type of message does that send? But, you know, I bring this up because we have to drive this home that President Obama was the more effective evil. The Democratic Party is no friend of the average working men. They are not our clearly defined enemy as the fascist Republican Party is, but they are, you know, the lesser of two evils, which really leads to, you know, evil either way. We can't use that argument anymore. Oh, the lesser of two evils, and you know, therefore, because if you vote for the lesser of two evils, you know, evil inevitably takes place. And that's what we have right now, is, you know, Democrats are content on advancing the corporate agenda They believe in corporate statism, okay, the corporations above all else, and the media likes to use the Democrats to, you know, as and the Republicans to these labels that we give these two parties. It's essentially, as Ralph Nader says, designed to provide semantic cover to big business. I try to not use the labels here on Carson's Corner, but sometimes I do use the labels. And, you know, it's unfortunate. It really is. But that's why I support the election boycott, and that's why, you know, I'm trying to raise awareness with this podcast because, you know, right now in America, we are being ruled by private economic power, okay? It is private economic power that is ruling us, and there's no question about that. I mean, you could look at the priorities of our government. Under President Obama, what has been the priority in terms of the economy for the last 3 or 4 years? It has been deficit reduction over job creation, right? The vast majority of Americans believe that the government has a responsibility to foster an environment in which jobs can be created. The government has a responsibility, I would argue, to create jobs, and the government can do a great job at creating jobs because everybody desires to have a pension. Everybody desires to have a good government job. The private sector is, you know, subject to the conditions of capitalism. It's volatile. You know, small businesses are risky to work for. Most go, you know, out of business within the first 5 years. And so, you know, I don't think that the government is the end-all be-all when it comes to creating jobs. But if you look at history, the government and government programs have been instrumental in getting us out of you know, bad conditions spurred on by capitalism. You could look after World War II, the creation of many government programs that led to millions and millions of jobs and got us out of the Great Depression. In fact, from 1947 until we were fully out of World War II, up until about 1980, some call this these decades the birth of the middle class because you had sustained economic growth at a time where the top tax rate never went below 70% and whatnot. And so, you know, this is a, you know, the Democrats, I'm losing my train of thought here. The Democrats are the more effective evil in advancing the corporate state. We are being ruled by private economic power. Okay. And the priorities of the American people, the things that we want the government to do for us, cannot be done under the current conditions. The government has been taken over, okay? And it is the corporations that are the seekers of this. It is the corporations and the wealthy that, again, want to use the government to produce the desired outcomes, okay? And so, you know, once you realize that we are being ruled by private economic power, that the government is not the government, it is the corporate government, then, you know, you start to maybe challenge some fundamental assumptions. You start to change the way you look at things, right? And that's where I'm at right now. You know, I mean, we're not the election boycott advocates. We're not monolithic. Okay. We don't agree on every single issue. For example, I believe in the functions of government. Okay. I believe that government regulations represent law and order, as Ralph Nader says, and they provide the framework for what we live in. You know, it's government regulation. It's rules that create the market, and we all, you know, take advantage of these rules. We all live in a society with a certain amount of peace of mind because there's government regulations, because there's government rules. I mean, you can't just abolish, and I know that there are people out there that think this, you can't just abolish all functions of government, all rules, and have everybody just live happily ever after. It just doesn't work like that. I support government regulations. I support regulatory agencies. The idea of regulatory agencies, you know, Ralph Nader talks about the abstraction ladder, going down the abstraction ladder. If your car is shown to be defective, and the automobile maker, because it would interfere with their profits, does not want to recall these products, what's the enforcement mechanism to make sure that these cars come off the market? It's the government. It's, you could go down the line, issue after, you know, pharmaceuticals. You're putting these drugs in your body if you have a medical condition or whatever. I mean, you know, we know that the United States of America is just a drug addicted nation. I mean, we consume a disproportionate share of the nation's prescription drugs, even though we have, or the world's prescription drugs, even though we have 5% of the world's population here. I mean, we're a drug induced nation. There's no question about that. Well, what happens if one of these drugs are tainted? What happens if, you know, one of these drugs are not safe? And keep in mind that the pharmaceutical industry is essentially a creation of the United States government. These companies run on taxpayer-funded research. Okay, we own these companies, I believe. Well, if they don't want to take the drug off the market, then what happens is that you know, it's the government that requires them to do that. It's the FDA. It's whatever, you know, regulatory agency that is designed to keep the peace, that is designed to be the cop on the beat, so to speak. And so, you know, you find that government regulations are very important to our way of life. But yet some may disagree with that. Some may believe that, you know, if we could just free up the market, these people tend to be libertarians, that, you know, we could live in a paradise here. We could live like what was displayed in, you know, one of Ayn Rand's novels and whatnot. We're not monolithic, but we all believe, the people that support the boycott election and those that are listening to this program most likely believe that the system is corrupt, the system cannot be repaired, and politicians are in part of the problem. Electing politicians is not going to give us peace of mind. The politicians are not elected to solve problems. And so if we believe that, then we have to come up with the most effective form of dissent. And I've come up with, and many people have come up with, disengaging from the political process and not supporting people that are tied to the electoral process. A revolution in America is going to come from outside of the system. It never comes from inside the system, okay? And these revolutions can be shown to be separate from electoral politics, and therefore, you know, can enact change because they're not wired into the system and everything. And that's where I've come to, and that's where a lot of people are starting to gravitate towards, is this idea that, you know, voting is only going to just continue our problems. Voting is basically consenting to our institutions, which we all agree are corrupt. You know, this is what is mind-boggling about the Tea Party. I find it fascinating that the Tea Party, you know, claims that everything's corrupt and claims that it's the government, but we love the military. You know, we want to support our troops, right? We all see the bumper stickers. We all see, you know, the slogans, you know, put forth to make people believe that they somehow support our troops. Well, you know, if the military is run by the government and, you know, the military is bogged down in over 130 countries worldwide, and the military is under control of the government, which is under control of the corporations, the merger between the state and corporations, then why would we support the United States military? Why would we support their missions? Shouldn't their missions be inherently valid? You know, if you follow your assumptions to their logical conclusion, then the military is invalid at this point. And I, you know, you want to, nobody wants to see military members, you know, killed or maimed or whatnot. I mean, there's no question about that. So, you know, our heart goes out to these people. But encouraging an analysis on the military and the current state of capitalism leads you to believe that the military, they're invalid. The military is essentially agents of the bourgeoisie. And, you know, you can look at what's going on, too, with in Ferguson right now, with the militarization of our police. This has been a hot topic in the past where, you know, the Pentagon, which siphons some tax dollars. I mean, 50 cents of every federal tax dollar that goes to the Pentagon or of our tax dollars goes to the Pentagon. I mean, it's just it's unbelievable. And in turn, military equipment is being passed on to our police force. And our police force across the country, you know, police departments, again, are using, you know, highly militarized tactics to stifle dissent, stifle debate, and whatnot. And so then you got to start a question, you know, what do the police force represent? Whose interests do the police force represent? And Paul Street talks about this, how, you know, in the United States of America, the Occupy movement wasn't allowed to exist. We didn't have an Occupy movement. We had an Occupy moment. And the Occupy moment was broken up by the state, okay, which was under the guise of corporate America. You know, this has been well documented. The FBI infiltrated the Occupy protesters as early as 2011, and you had government agencies like the Domestic Security Alliance Council, which you know, teamed up with the private sector, aka big business, and you know came up with a strategy to neutralize the Occupy protesters, and that's exactly what happened. Brutal fashion all across America while President Obama is fundraising, you know, from the donor class. It's really unbelievable, but it illustrates so many contradictions, and it illustrates, you know, so many reasons why you should reject the system. Because, you know, here President Obama, you know, gives rhetorical flourishes to the Occupy protests, but at the same time, his administration is working to undermine the Occupy protests. We know this. Democratic mayors all across the country broke up the Occupy protests. The police state brutalized the Occupy protesters. Now, this would never happen to the Tea Party. We understand that. But you can understand how, you know, even civil disobedience is not allowed in our system because our system is so inflexible, you know, right now. All of this is happening while we have a black man in the White House, right? A supposed progressive. Give me a break, folks. You could see what's happening right here. All right, we'll be right back here on Carson's Corner. Don't touch that dial, folks. We're going to play a nice George Carlin clip here. George Carlin, a philosopher. And speaking of philosophers, one philosopher in Paul Street's book, mentioned in Paul Street's book, is a man named John Dewey. And John Dewey made the remark, made the statement that basically politics is the shadow that big business casts over society. I want you to ponder on that as we go to a break here on Carson's Corner.
Now, there's one thing you might have noticed I don't complain about. Politicians. Everybody complains about politicians. Everybody says they suck. Well, where do people think these politicians come from? They don't fall out of the sky. They don't pass through a membrane from another reality. They come from American parents and American families, American homes, American schools, American churches, American businesses, and American universities, and they're elected by American citizens. This is the best we can do, folks. This is what we have to offer. It's what our system produces. Garbage in, garbage out. If you have selfish, ignorant citizens, you're going to get selfish, ignorant leaders. And term limits ain't going to do you any good. You're just going to wind up with a brand new bunch of selfish, ignorant Americans. So maybe it's not the politicians who suck. Maybe something else sucks around here, like the public. Yeah, the public sucks. There's a nice campaign slogan for somebody. The public sucks, fuck hope. Fuck hope. Because if it's really just the fault of these politicians, then where are all the other bright people of conscience? Where are all the bright, honest, intelligent Americans ready to step in and save the nation and lead the way? We don't have people like that in this country. Everybody's at the mall, scratching his ass, picking his nose, taking his credit card out of his fanny pack and buying a pair of sneakers with lights in them. So I have solved this little political dilemma for myself in a very simple way. On election day, I stay home. I don't vote. Fuck them. Fuck them. I don't vote. Two reasons I don't vote. First of all, it's meaningless. This country was bought and sold and paid for a long time ago. The shit they shuffle around every 4 years doesn't mean a fucking thing. And secondly, I don't vote because I believe if you vote, you have no right to complain. People like to twist that around, I know. They say, well, if you don't vote, you have no right to complain. But where's the logic in that? If you vote and you elect dishonest, incompetent people, and they get into office and screw everything up, well, you are responsible for what they have done. You caused the problem. You voted them in. You have no right to complain. I, on the other hand, who did not vote, in fact, did not even leave the House on election day, am in no way responsible for what these people have done and have every right to complain as loud as I want about the mess you created that I had nothing to do with. So I know that a little later on this year you're going to have another one of those really swell presidential elections that you like so much. You'll enjoy yourselves. It'll be a lot of fun. I'm sure as soon as the election is over, your country will improve immediately. As for me, I'll be home on that day doing essentially the same thing as you. The only difference is, when I get finished masturbating, I'm going to have a little something to show for it, folks. Thank you very much.
Hi, this is Frank Schaefer, author of Sex, Mom, and God. You're listening to Carson's Corner, a show I enjoy. I hope you enjoy it, too. I encourage you to listen.
All right, we're back here on Carson's Corner. And another reason not to vote, ladies and gentlemen, is looking at what happened in Michigan. Okay, Michigan used to be the bedrock of American manufacturing, right? I mean, you had GM, which you had Whirlpool, you had so many different companies that owned many buildings, many manufacturing plants there and whatnot. And what has happened in Michigan right now with the emergency financial manager is what I would consider fascism. Okay, this is fascism where, you know, the people of Michigan rejected the financial manager, or as Tom Hartman calls him, the little dictator, Kevin Orr, this corporate, you know, guy, this wired into the corporate state, banking, Wall Street, all the negative attributes of society, right? The socially negative attributes of society become positively rewarded ventures for business. And I think that applies. I do. I can make an argument that certainly applies here. Well, these financial managers, again, the voting populace in Michigan voted to get rid of the financial managers, okay, but yet Rick Snyder, because of a law he passed, allows for the financial managers to do whatever they want. They could sell assets. They could break labor contracts. They can dismiss pension boards. And this is all in Paul Street's book. Very, very important stuff here. And the local, the legislature, the elected officials can't even vote to raise taxes. They can't even vote to do anything without the permission of financial, this financial manager. Now, how is that democracy? You know, how is that fair? How is that a representative democracy? It's not. It's fascism. It's the business community running everything. And in the United States of America, you know that we have a economic system that is much closer to fascism, much closer to what was under Mussolini or you know, in Italy right now, because we know that stock prices bump up whenever it is announced that somebody is going to be the head of this regulatory agency or that regulatory agency. And we know that fascism exists in America by looking at what happens to people when they leave their regulatory capacity and go move to the private sector. It's one of the things that Andrew Craig talks about in his book, Puppet Masters, Obama, Romney, and their masters. How, you know, you got someone like Julius Genachowski, former head of the FCC. This man was taken care of. This man, you know, a corporatist guy, again, under President Obama, right, wired into the industry. Because after all, these are the only people that are qualified to regulate an industry. You know, a person who is a cutout from that industry. There's no dissidents. There's no other experts other than the corporate, you know, pro business guy, right? And so this clown, he gets in there and basically makes the telecommunications industry more accessible to big business, you know, mergers, acquisitions, you know, deregulation. President Obama's been a deregulating machine. We know that. And this guy, once he's done, he goes and works for the Carlyle Group, okay? And this is how America works. This is the puppet masters at work. And it's unfortunate. It really is. And Michigan, I think, is a really good example of why you shouldn't vote, because voting is absolutely meaningless. It really is. You've got a financial manager now that is selling off assets to the business community. You have a water shortage in that state because, you know, it's not profitable to keep the water going for, you know, the water companies who are all, you know, going to be, it's an absolute mess. It makes me ashamed to be an American. It really does. But this is the state that we're at. And George Carlin is right. It is the public. It is the public that allows this to take place. It is the public that is bogged down with reality shows and sports and all the different distractions given to us by the elites to you know, manufacture consent. That's where we're at right now in America. And speaking of which, there's a really good movie I'm watching on Netflix. It's just remarkable. It's called God Bless America. It was directed by Bobcat Goldthwait, and it's a very, very political movie. It's about this guy who, you know, just basically is fed up with society, the materialistic nature of society, the cruel nature of, you know, reality shows, his place of employment. It's just everything. Everybody's just, you know, it's life in America right now, and he goes on this killing spree. It's kind of a dark comedy, this movie, but it really is a poignant film. It came out in 2011, and it is on Netflix. So if you get a chance to go on Netflix and watch this, it's called God Bless America. Really, really good stuff there. But we're almost out of time here on Carson's Corner. I think we really went around the bases here. We talked about the financialization of our society. We talked about how I came to support the election boycott. We read that statement at the beginning of the program. I told you how both political parties, more so even the Democrats, who are the more effective evil, have done their best to undermine dissent, the Occupy protests. We've done a lot here, and you know we're going to keep on banging this drum because you know focusing on the news of the day, focusing on elections and focusing on this and that, they're all surface issues. They're all meaningless in the grand scheme of things. Now, what's going on with in Ferguson with the murder of Michael Brown, who was shot a number of times, that is important because it shows you how racism still is inherent in our criminal justice system and how we are racially divided in America, even more so after the election of President Obama, who really does not represent the interests of black America. But it shows you, I think, how race is used as a proxy to maintain control on the part of the elites. You know, dog whistle politics was used in large part to achieve the racial homogeneity, racial homogeneity that the Republican Party has achieved over the last 30, 50 plus years. So now the Republican Party is a fascist party. The government is used as a symbol of it's associated with minority. Government programs are associated with minority. And this goes back to the deficit versus job creation argument that, you know, deficit reduction is very important on the part of the elites, and it's been the main priority of the Obama administration over the last 4 or 5 years because government programs are associated with minorities, okay? And, giving government your government programs and government spending, it's food stamps are a symbol of abuse on the part of the government, and therefore have to be cut. We all have to cut spending, and yeah, we all have to pass a spending cap, a balanced budget amendment. And that's the route we're going, ladies and gentlemen. A complete corporate state in which the countervailing institutions are being nullified, being destroyed year after year, and one countervailing area that we have in our economy is the internet, where I'm broadcasting now, and that is under attack as we speak. That is under attack completely by the corporate state, and pretty soon in America you're not going to be able to do anything. The access to internet programs like this and others is under threat, and it's going to cease to exist in the future because, this is how movements are started. This is how dissent is exercised. But they control the everything. Even though the internet is ours, it's taxpayer-funded research. The internet is a creation of the United States government. But because ownership has been warped in America, we've granted ownership to the corporations, to the elites now. And so they're coming after the internet. They have been. These bastard corporations like Verizon, Comcast, which in my opinion should be broken up, they produce no value to society. They're evil. They're monsters trying to gobble up as much profit as they can. They're run by sociopaths. They're coming after the internet, ladies and gentlemen. Make no mistake about it. Then what's next? Everything. No privacy. Nothing in this country. It's disgusting. All right. I want to tell you can friend me on Facebook at facebook.com/BobCarsonMMA. You could follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/BobCarsonMMA. And make sure to support Carson's Corner, blogtalkradio.com/Carson's Corner. I'm Bob Carson. Thanks for listening. Until next time, ladies and gentlemen, show some respect.